Heads up, eyes open and fists clenched. It's Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. coming to you live and direct. It ain't coming to you from no TNT or no NBC, but coming to you again from the POCC. And particularly right here on the West Coast with the Block Report. Fortune right now, you're rapping with one of our comrades, in fact, our chief of staff for POC, POCC, was also son of present political prisoner, Herman Bell, New York 3. We're going to touch on, you know what I'm saying, touch on how long his comrades been held captive. Where he's held captive at now, what's the present status, and how we can, you know, our committee as well as our people in general move forward with not only making a reality for New York 3 to get back on the streets, but again, we say what's our call, free them all. All right, hey, revolutionary love and respect, comrade. Chief, good to be here with you.
Good to be here, free them all.
Free them all. Just for basic layout to us, you know what I'm saying, give us some information on, you know what I'm saying, basically how we say it, from whence you came. You know, who your father is, history, you know what I'm saying, how long you've been held captive. Again, just what's the status of it right now?
No problem. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here with y'all. Basically, Herman Bell, my father Herman Bell, is part of a case that's widely known as New York 3. His co-defendants were Jahlil Muntakim and Albert New Washington, who is now a revolutionary martyr, died a couple years ago behind prison walls. Basically, the case was part of the massive frame-up that went on in the late 60s, early 70s, the Black Power movement, quote-unquote, the movement to liberate African people within the United States. My father was actively involved with the Black Panther Party, the Black Liberation Army, and other forces that were engaged in the struggle to free African people at that point in time, and were also targeted by the state, specifically counterintelligence program set up by J. Edgar Hoover. Other cases, Geronimo Pratt, Eddie Marshall Conway, Russell Schultz, widely spread known cases, Daruba Bin Wahid, things of that nature, are all in the same breath, in the same movement and struggle. Sada Shakur, as my father's case, it's widely not known that there are many political prisoners that exist in North America, and a lot of their names are not, you know, put out there in the community as much as they need to be and whatnot. But a little bit more about my father's case. Pretty much, you know, he was surveyed by the FBI, as all progressive and active forces were, Black in particular at that point in time. His activities and his movements, along with the people in the circles that he was around, were, you know, basically vamped on, as we say, part of the same vamping as the assassination of your father, Chairman Fred. And you know, he was attempts on his life, as well as attempts on other brothers' life. And, you know, like you said, it was jailed, exiled, or killed. You know what I mean? In turn, a lot of brothers, you know, didn't make it. Stuff, things like that. But particularly with this case, you know, the specifics on it is that, you know, he was framed up for the murder, assassination of two New York City police officers, Waverly Jones and Joseph E. Adentini. Basically, the facts, they made movies about it, FBI and counterparts in Hollywood and stuff, did movies, books, and other things about it, trying to smear, to put propaganda on the Black liberation struggle, because the case was so widely recognized. And it was actually a call from Nixon from the top to basically bust somebody on the case, no matter if they did it or not. You know what I mean? And these documents are verified with the counterintelligence that we obtained from the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. Witnesses were coerced, ballistics reports were fabricated, all different types of things. Counterintelligence agents were placed in the defense, and a lot of different wrongdoings. Police detectives caught lying on stand, things of that nature happened. You know, it was a railroad trial, and he was sentenced after one hung jury, he was sentenced to 25 life. And after the hung jury, basically what they did was they went ahead and coerced witnesses. You know, they held children from their mothers, and you know, even to the point where certain people were cattle prodded to go ahead and give the testimony that was necessary to secure a conviction. And he's been fighting that conviction ever since, being very active and still been active in trying to free African people and fight for the freedom of other political prisoners across the nation that he has solidarity with. Leonard Peltier, Rafael Kinsel Miranda, who's a good close friend of his while he was in prison as well, the Puerto Rican political prisoner, has been released. You know, and that's a basic rundown, but, you know, he's part of the, you know, massive movement that was attacked by COINTELPRO at that point in time, and he's still behind the walls. He was captured in 73 and he's still upstate New York right now in the Eastern Correctional Facility. And it's about to be 32 years going on. Him and Eddie Conway and Jalil Muntakim are some of the longest held African political prisoners in the world, not just the country, but the world. So, you know, we need to recognize these brothers, learn more about their cases, learn more about who they are. I feel the obligation to do work around his case and other political prisoners' cases, not just because I'm his son, but because I'm a son of the people, you know, in terms of, you know, just how I feel dedication to the sacrifice that these folks made for us to be living, that we don't always recognize every day. So, you know, that's just a basic rundown. You know, anything else, you know, I don't want to assume that folks don't know it or whatever, but, you know.
Yeah, we always say that, you know, Hollywood and Washington, D.C. are interconnected, you know, and we know the state recognizes the importance of propaganda and everything. And you mentioned earlier about the whole thing about the movies and propaganda that was put out. And you can't touch on, for listeners, like even the quote-unquote strange time and a lot of slander campaigns come out, you know, right? I'm going to let you just go in details, like, before they go up for parole here, and all of a sudden, about the connection with the popularized TV show Kojak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can't touch on that.
Exactly. Part. There was a lot of spinoff of the New York 3 case. It was very big in New York at the time. You know, the police officers and the police union and forces of that nature still have definitely not forgotten about the case. And they obviously used propaganda as a tactic to try to dismay any other African youth from becoming politicized, especially to the nature of political prisoners and the existence of political prisoners and what they represent, which is freedom for African people in the United States, and the fact that oppression does exist and always has existed and never has stopped since you know, we brought to these shores on boats and slave chains. And, you know, political prisoners, the existence of them represent that, and represents the farce and the hypocrisy that exists here in the United States in terms of everything being free and fair and democratic. So in that breath, you know, these brothers come up to parole. My father came up to parole 2 years ago. I'm sorry, 1 year ago, February of 04. And, you know, for other brothers that come up for parole and things like that, it's not a big sweat. And, you know, you wouldn't even hear about the case. But, you know, in this instance, major slander campaign went on, and that delved all the way to Hollywood and playing this movie that was made in the 80s called Badge of the Assassin, starring James Woods and Yaphet Kotto. The actual prosecutor of the case was one of the executive producers of the movie, and the financiers were people very connected to the FBI and the State Department. And he actually went on to become mayor of Beverly Hills at one point for his successes in securing the conviction of New York 3. James Woods played him in the movie. The movie came on, you know, randomly on Hollywood True Channel or whatever. It came on even BET movies on Black History Month.
Did that.
You know, so basically it's a prime example. And this coordinated with, you know, slander campaigns in the press, the New York Post, the New York Times, other articles and slander material that they put out about Herman Bell and Jalil Muntakim. And, you know, it's all connected. You know, it's the fact that, you know, they use movies and propaganda, and they actually came out with a book as well that, you know, sold up a million copies or whatever. It's all to slander the movement and slander the name of these political prisoners.
Not in fact, also that a lot of these criminals, they make their careers through blood, sweat, tears, and little years. I'm being held captive in the conversation camp. I point out a lot of contributions, like in particular with the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, where he got a case where someone else supposedly admitted, you know what I'm saying, they actually done the shooting, the case got Mumia on. And I even contradicted amongst the so-called witnesses, even factual evidence with witnesses have recanted their statements. And I point these things out to say, you know, to bring out the fact that, you know, I mean, these brothers, these soldiers and soldieress, they, you know what I'm saying, they not doing no time for some alleged crime, you know what I'm saying? Again, it's for the, you know, for their particular stance and what they represented. And that, even in particular, with the case of Herman Bell in New York 3, it's a unique situation. I believe it was the last parole hearing, when the actual son of one of the police that came and hit him, and he was in unity and support of Herman Bell in New York 3 getting paroled for the case. You can touch on that for us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was a a major instance where Waverly Jones Jr., the son of Waverly Jones, who was one of the officers who was killed in the New York 3 shooting. You know, he came out and we reached out to him, and New York 3 Defense Campaign reached out to him and, you know, wanted to find out what his particular stance was on, you know, political prisoners and the movement and what he felt about that case and about his father's assassination. And he was actually, you know, waiting for somebody to reach out to him so he could say his side of the story, because the police union and a lot of the forces that, you know, have been propping up victims' families prior to that never reached out to him, you know, didn't reach out to him to see what his stance was, and because probably that they knew that he was in favor of the release of the New York 3 of Herman and Jalil. And, you know, he supports those brothers. He's actually very proud of those brothers. And he came out and did a press conference in response to some of the slander campaigns that was going on in the media. And me and him, Charles Barron, who's a city council member who's running for mayor out in New York, and some other clergy and leaders out, held a press conference in February before the parole hearing and proclaimed Waverly and his family, his wife, his mother, and his sister's support for the release of Herman Bell. And that's very unprecedented, and it was shocking in a sense to the state. You know, it held them back, because, you know, it's not too many instances where actual victim's family and actual son, who's the spitting image of his father, comes out in support of the release, because he recognizes what happened with political prisoners, with the movement, with the Black Panthers, so on and so forth. And he supports not only the release of Herman, Jalil, but he supports the release of all political prisoners. And that position is, you know, very commendable. Shout out to Waverly Jones.
Believe that. Comrade, this is on a personal / political level. Dig, a lot of times, you know, I talk about the struggles I went through, my daughter coming to visit me while I was held captive. And I think back in the piece that Winnie Mandela, when she said that when held captive, not only does a political prisoner suffer, but the whole family aspect, you know. And, you know, the state part of this whole thing, they trying to keep families together, so on and so forth. But we know the real deal. Can't touch on just even that's the struggles in maintaining, you know what I'm saying, the relationship, you know what I'm saying, with your father. I mean, I never heard about the long trips you got to go, you know what I'm saying, go up there the whole lick, you know what I'm saying, with your steadfast position about, you know what I'm saying, making, you know what I'm saying, the connection continue, if you can't touch on that for us.
Too. Definitely. Well, you know, in similar likes with all prisoners' children out there, you know, one of the things they try to do is disconnect you from your family and your lifeline, so to speak, you know, trying to make it so you don't get any mail, you don't get any visits, you don't get any support from the outside community. And was particularly emphasizing the case of Herman because of his political stance, you know, it was made as difficult as possible for him to keep in touch with his family. He has 10 brothers and sisters across the nation, and his mother, who passed away since he's been in prison, and his father, who's passed away since he's been in prison. And, you know, it was a particular stance of mine that, you know, even took a certain amount of political development and consciousness in my own life to become to realize that was a emphasized thing that the state was trying to do to him. And, you know, I couldn't let that succeed in me not being able to go visit him or support his case or go on family visits, so on and so forth. Basically, it's definitely been a struggle, just as it's a struggle for anybody who has a parent or family member behind bars. But, you know, I felt like it's particularly emphasized for me because, you know, the treatment that Herman receives behind the wall since he's been in, and the necessity of the family in his life to keep his spirit strong and to keep him going. And he's one of the strongest people, you know, you'll ever meet, whether he's your father or not. You know, he'll make you feel like he's your father just by the guidance and knowledge that he's attained in his life and perseverance. You know, he actually started it. Program called Victory Gardens, where he organized people in the streets to go start a program up in Athens, Maine, and farm food and disenfranchised folks and youth and children and things of that nature, to go farm food, teach folks how to grow their own fruits and vegetables and agriculture and bring it back to the community.
This is a brainchild that he developed. Wild Hill Captive.
He developed this brainchild in terms of, you know, a survival program, bringing it back to the survival programs, not charity or anything like that. A survival program, in the same breath as the Black Panther Party, where he actually donated thousands of pounds of carrots, lettuce, onions, all that to disenfranchised communities in New York State, Boston, and all over the East Coast. And this is just an example of his perseverance. Whether he was incarcerated or not, he has always maintained his commitment to African people and to liberation of all peoples of color and freedom of, you know, like-minded people in the United States. So, you know, it's just an example of how we need to stay committed to him, me in particular, of course, as his family, but all folks, you know, that support the sacrifice that these brothers have laid down their whole life to see us in a better place in the future.
Sometimes I go through this, you know, funny feeling about this whole metaphysical, like this deja vu type of thing, but it's something, you know, like I say, just even from one generation to another, you know what I'm saying? As I pointed out earlier, you know, both our members being members of the Black Panther Party, and just say from say comrade, you know, we commend you and say, you know, taking a position to be goes on, revolutionary love and respect. Any you know, points you want to put out, like, you know, for that contact information or what next parole hearing date is or whatever. You know, man, Chief of Staff, I'm going to let you close it out again. See what's up, call for your mom. It's on you, Chief.
Definitely. Well, thank you for having me here. You know, I definitely wanted to touch upon one of the campaigns, the POCC and all coalition and supporting organizations will be putting forth, called the Political Prisoners Freedom Fund. We're galvanizing support financially, media-wise, and others for our political prisoners nationally. And, you know, putting out a newsletter and other materials to let folks know what's the situation of political prisoners, how they're doing behind bars, what their stances are on particular views and news today. And, you know, just keeping abreast of the whole political prisoner movement and struggle, and using that also as a tool to garner finances so that we can actually have full-scale organizations working around the clock to free these brothers and sisters, which is what they deserve. And really just trying to break it down real strategically in terms of, you know, grassroots finance. And we're not anticipating any foundation or any major left donor or anything like that to finance the support of the freedom of political prisons. It's got to come from right here in the community. So please look out for the Political Prison Freedom Fund. You can check that out at ppfreedomfund.org. Website's under construction, but it will be up very soon. You can get all the information necessary to donate and get involved. Please check out, you know, all the campaigns that the POCC put forth in the community near you. Free them all. Free Aaron Patterson, free Mumia Abu-Jamal, free Sundiata, free all these brothers. You know that this issue is definitely something that you're going to see coming in 2005, 2006, until all of them are free. It's not going to stop. It's going to come straight to your door, straight to your television, straight to your magazines, everything, because we banging for freedom, and that's the bottom line. So definitely want to shout out J.R. Valerie and the work that he's been doing in the Bay Area. He's the Minister of Information with POCC, local chairwoman Rashida, and just, you know, support all the folks that support us and vice versa. Each one teach one. So, you know, definitely thank you for having me here, and free them all.
Thank you for being with us. Free them all.